You're listening to Friday Podcast from the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program. I'm Lauren Reese, and in today's episode, we're sharing Sue Binyez's remarks at a recent Wilson Center event co-sponsored by the Center for Climate and Security. For more than 25 years, Sue was the lead climate lawyer for the State Department, where she played a central role in all major international climate negotiations, including the Paris Agreement. She recently rejoined the State Department, where she's working with the Presidential Envoy on Climate, John Kerry. In her Wilson Center remarks, Sue provides an overview of President Biden's executive order on the climate crisis, which marks an unprecedented move to center climate change in U.S. foreign policy and national security.
So you asked me to say a few words, not specifically about the Arctic or climate security, but about the international climate policy of the new administration. So I'm going to try to do that. Many of the elements of the policy are found in the early executive order of January 27th. So if you look at nothing else, you know, that's the best thing to look at. Other elements have evolved since then or are still evolving, and I'll mention some of those. So I think it's helpful rather than go through, 27 different elements to conceptually group them into four baskets or buckets. First is getting the US back on track. Second is exercising U.S. climate leadership. Third is raising global climate ambition. And fourth is putting climate at the center of U.S. foreign policy and national security. Now, there's obvious overlap among some of these. The more the United States can get itself back on track, the better position it is in to exercise climate leadership. And obviously, a purpose of exercising climate leadership is to raise global climate ambition. So there's lots of overlap among these categories. But roughly speaking, the first one, getting the U.S. back on track. The key elements of that basket are the following. Rejoining Paris, and we can put a check mark next to that one. The instrument of acceptance was signed on day one. 30 days later, on February 19th, the United States became a party again. Second element is the NDC, or nationally determined contribution. Parties to the Paris Agreement are supposed to maintain a national emissions target. Once we withdrew from the Paris Agreement, we sort of assumed that our pre-existing NDC slid off the table. So the executive order said, get started immediately developing the new one. And the EO says that the US aims to have the next one ready in advance or at the President's Climate Summit, which I'll mention in a minute. The third element of getting back on track relates to climate finance. Again, the EO says, get started right away putting together a climate finance package. It's something that the US was not great on during the last 4 years. The US walked away from part of its pledge to the Green Climate Fund, et cetera, et cetera. And then the last element in that bucket relates to the Kigali Amendment to the Montreal Protocol on the phase down of hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs. The EO directed the State Department to get the package ready to send to the Senate, gave them 60 days to do that, and those 60 days have almost expired. So I expect that package will be done soon and sent over to the White House for next steps. Unlike most situations involving treaties, where often legislation comes after the Senate approval process, in this case, it actually happened the other way around, where Congress passed an act at the very end of last year called the AIM Act, which actually includes the functional equivalent of the phase down in the Kigali Amendment. Therefore, if Senate advice and consent were to be forthcoming, the US would be in a good position to be able to implement. So that's basket one. Basket two is exercising climate leadership. First element, the appointment of the first ever special presidential envoy. We've had special envoys, but this is a sort of raising up of the profile. And of course, the person in the form of John Kerry is also to be taken notice of. The second is to reconvene the major economies process. That is an interesting grouping because it was started under the Bush administration under the name of the Major Economies Meeting. It's the same countries since then. They represent about 80% of global emissions, population, and GDP. It was continued under Obama with a slight name change to the Major Economies Forum, basically discontinued or sort of dormant during the Trump administration, and it's being revived under this administration. The third element is to hold a climate summit. That was one of the campaign commitments, to hold a leader-level climate summit within the first 100 days. It's now scheduled for just within 100 days, Earth Day, April 22nd, spilling over to April 23rd slightly because of, you know, virtual time zone differences. And basically it's gonna be one-stop shopping so that a portion of the leader level summit will be the reconvening of the Major Economies Forum. Finally, in this exercising leadership bucket, we have making it climate change a priority and integrating it into both bilateral diplomacy and a wide range of international fora. And the executive order actually spells this out, basically acknowledges that climate is relevant to many fields, not just climate per se. And it includes some of the fora where the last administration didn't really want the words climate change to appear at all. So those would include the G7, the G20, the International Maritime Organization, ICAO on civil aviation, various ocean-related fora, and relevant to today, the Arctic, which is expressly mentioned there as well. Third basket, in terms of raising global climate ambition, I'll just go into a little bit of detail there, maybe a minute's worth. You know, Paris Agreement had the objective of limiting temperature rise to well below 2 degrees, while pursuing efforts, quote unquote, to limit it to 1.5. And Paris also said that parties should aim to achieve a balance between emissions and removals by the second half of the century. That's equivalent to the concept of net zero emissions, balance of emissions and removals, but second half of the century. Well, what happened a couple of years later was the IPCC report on 1.5 degrees, which made much clearer that we need to increase the scale and speed of climate action. So in other words, it became clearer that, you know, as between well below 2 and 1.5, we need to be leaning closer to 1.5. And in terms of achieving net zero within the second half of the century, we need to be much closer to 2050 than, let's say, 2100. The other things that happened post-Paris were that Paris had encouraged parties to revisit their nationally determined contributions in 2020, but 2020 didn't happen as planned. There was no conference of the parties because of COVID, and a lot of countries sort of waited to enhance their NDCs. So it puts quite a bit of pressure / opportunity onto 2021, because all three of these things will be, I would say, you know, addressed dealt with. Temperature goal, timeline for net zero emissions, and increasing 2030 targets. So, and I'll quote roughly Secretary Kerry here on those three issues. He's basically said that the goal for the Glasgow COP should be to leave a 1.5 degree temperature limit within reach or not foreclosed. So that's in terms of the long term. He's also pressing countries, at least the major economies, to commit to net zero emissions no later than 2050. In other words, the first year of the second half of the century, which is what the Biden administration has committed to domestically. And to be specific about strategies for getting there. So not only to commit to the goal, but to say, here's how we intend to get there. And he's also seeking enhanced 2030 NDC targets. And another way of putting that is, you know, increased action within the decade of the 2020s. So, you know, he has been, and I guess I would say our whole team has been actively involved in climate diplomacy in the last several weeks, both to align on goals and to try to raise ambition, particularly among the major economies. As Ambassador from Canada said, we've done a leader level statement with them and have been engaged with Norway as well. Canada and Norway are both our umbrella group partners within the UNFCCC process and obviously have longstanding climate relationships with both of them. On the last point, just to end in terms of the fourth basket, on the centrality of climate to foreign policy and national security, The executive order makes very clear, as a matter of, I guess, policy and rhetoric, if you want to call it that, that it basically just says climate change is at the center of foreign policy and national security, lest there be any confusion about that. But then it also operationalizes the point. As Sherry mentioned, it tasks out various reviews to the Defense Department. It tasks out a national intelligence estimate to the DNI on the impacts of climate. It doesn't say this in the EO, but as many of you probably know, Secretary Kerry sort of sits on the National Security Council in his own right, which is again, kind of an indicator that climate and national security are being melded. And just last point, Secretary Kerry has given a number of talks related to climate and security in the last couple of weeks. One was at the UN Security Council, where the UK held a leader level event on climate and security. And you know, those remarks are online. And he also gave a talk to the Munich Security Conference a few weeks ago.
You've been listening to Friday Podcast from the Wilson Center. Thanks for tuning in. For more information, follow us on Twitter at New Security Beat and visit newsecuritybeat.org.